coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. I'm on vacation, living the good life. I'll be sure to rub it in, let everyone know. Plus, we had some night golf for us. It's night golf season with a tour in Korea and Japan this week and a couple of weird golf headlines as well. And all the chaos from college football week 8 and NFL week 7. Plus, this week's featured guest is Sean Hester, great golf instructor out of TPC Boston, who has some really cool insight on the game, seeing the world's best at his course, and we get his side of the story on some Barstool sports drama and more. But first, when you're out golfing where your phone rests for 5 hours is a big issue this year in 2019 because we're just all on our phones all day. The cup holder belongs to beers and waters, and those front compartments are for lots of other things while you're golfing. This was previously an unsolved mystery until Desert Fox Golf came along with the phone caddy. It's the go-to phone holder for golf carts designed to keep your phone safe and at your fingertips. I tried it a couple weeks ago, worked out perfectly. With sliding wings and a faceplate to adjust to fit almost every iPhone and Android model, it just Velcros right on to the side of your cart in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps open where you need them to be seen, play music with ease, watch the game on your phone, answer texts and calls, all easily while you hit the course. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, be sure to get your specialty pink phone caddy today at desertfoxgolf.com. And $5 from each purchase is going directly to the cause. Again, follow them on social media for the latest promotions and golf efficiently with the Desert Fox phone caddy. It's desertfoxgolf.com. Plus, if you're needing training aids, then golftrainingaids.com is the place for you, and we're here to get you a discount site-wide on everything you need to help your game. The world's largest selection of golf teaching and training aids, they've been serving the industry for more than 35 years, and they are our one-stop shop for everything to help improve your game. All you need to do is follow us on our Facebook at Course of Life Podcast. That's at Course of Life Podcast. We'll tweet out and send out the link there on our Facebook page as well. Our discount code is COL10 for 10% off your purchase. Again, follow Course of Life on Facebook or Twitter to grab that link and get yourself a deal that will help lower your scores today.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life, presented by our friends at Izzo Golf and at Desert Fox Golf. This is the podcast where we talk about everything happening in the world of golf, plus other things that interest us from the world of sports and pop culture. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, you said you're on vacation. I know you're just south of me in Marco Island, enjoying the good life right there on the Gulf.
It's tough. Well, Mike, I've been trying to figure out whether I'm going to be parasailing in the morning or the afternoon today. It's caused a lot of strife. We're still trying to book our reservation. You know, I have a tea time for later this week, but you know, there's some scattered showers, so I might have to move it a day. So I've got some real hardcore issues that I'm working with this week. So I hope everyone sends their thoughts and prayers out to me as I organize the rest of my week here in paradise.
Hashtag first world issues.
Big time. Yes.
You get no pity from me whatsoever. None whatsoever. Let's turn our attention way across to the other side of the world, where it was the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges in Korea. It was night golf in Asia, big names all over the place. And it was an exciting week, except for the fact that Justin Thomas really kind of had this by the horns the entire weekend.
Yeah, he's done this a couple times now. I've kind of lost count of his just like random overseas wins in Asia in the fall, but he seems to love these trips. We profiled him last week because he had that really cool shot flying over Alaska in his flight path heading over to Korea. And he had himself quite a week, just absolutely rolled on the weekend. It was a late night, Saturday night finish. I think he ended up winning by 4 or 5 shots. Very commanding performance from JT. And it's one of those things where, you know, there's a lot about a talk about who's the best or who's on top of their game. Just from a 2019 perspective, we had the Brooks versus Rory debate with Player of the Year, but Justin Thomas is just very consistently racking up wins, and his win total is starting to be very impressive. Despite the fact he hasn't had a ton of signature victories, he's really adding up the numbers quick here, and he does it very well when he goes overseas, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see just how all of them do overseas in general, and we almost had a couple different aces on the par four.
It was like still, not a short par four, like a 350 yard par four too.
Yeah, and I think Phil hit the pin off the tee of this one with his driver, incredible.
You should have seen the reaction from everyone on the green.
Yeah,
because they're just like about to putt, and Phil just blasts his driver right up to the green. It smacks off the flag stick and stops about 4 inches from the cup. Impressive stuff from Phil. He can still smoke it out there. Still hitting bombs at his late
bombs.
Age. Yeah, absolutely.
Hitting bombs. It's just kind of crazy seeing all that happen. But JT, of course, did still roll the victory, and then he celebrated.
Yeah, he bought dinner for everybody. I think he tweeted out he sent out a couple numbers on Instagram. I'm not sure if it was the tab. It looked like it was about 1500, which I thought was kind of low. I don't know what that was. Might have been foreign currency or something like that. But yeah, dinner was on JT for sure. Nice little group outing they had after the final round of the CJ Cup. And it was an interesting transition because now we're just like full on in like Asia night golf mode here in the States. We had that random exhibition, which Tiger was a part of. I don't know if you guys saw any of this. There were some great clips that got tweeted out, but it was Tiger, Jason Day, Hideki, and Rory all in an exhibition skins match there in Japan leading up to that Zozo Championship this week. But it's interesting to watch the guys, the world's best in the middle of the night. It messes with my mind. Time zones. You know, I'm 32 years old. I haven't figured out time zones yet.
Yeah, it's just difficult to comprehend after a while. You just got to do what Tiger did and just start putting yourself in that time zone that you're going to be in or you want to be a part of.
Oh,
about
the
a week
wake up
ahead
calls.
Of time.
That's right. He did that for the British Open last year.
He did. Didn't work for him, but
Good stuff.
Let's turn our attention to the ladies.
Yes, weird headlines from golf.
Yeah, you ever had to take a penalty stroke? At all.
I have. I remember in junior tournaments, like, you know, the water hazard.
Yeah.
I had a weird one, Mike, where I was in a high school golf match and I hit a bunker shot and a guy who I was playing against, he called me for grounding my club in the sand when I just did not. It was just like a he said thing, and he just screwed me, and it was a 2-shot penalty that I'll never forget. I've had weird ones like that, but like nothing to the degree of the story from Leanne Walker.
I was going to say, have you ever had 58 stroke penalty?
No, never 58. That's an impressive tally.
It is, and it's all because the caddy lined up putts.
So this Leanne Walker, she was competing in some sort of women's qualifier and carded, I think it was like 91-27 for her 2 rounds of golf. 127 because she was penalized 58 strokes over the course of these rounds because she didn't realize she was violating a rule in which her caddy was illegally helping her line up putts. So she goes to the scorer's tent. They review each moment when she was doing this, and they tallied up the fact that she did this dozens and dozens of times over the course of 2 days, and she turned in 127 for her second round score. A very strange scorecard to hand in indeed. And Mike, I think 92-127 – I think you could have beat her straight up. I think you could have gotten her for 2 rounds.
I definitely could have on 127. I don't think I've ever hit 100 anything in the 120s, I don't think.
Yeah, we just need you two scores right around 105, and you could have clipped her by about 10 shots there.
I'm an average golfer. I'm right around 100, so, you know.
That was the weird one. And then the other weird one happened on the European Tour. Marcel Seam. Apparently, they had been going back and forth on whether they were going to do lift clean in place last week on the European Tour, and they had decided pre-round not to, but Marcel Seam did not get that memo at all. So he was lifting, cleaning, and placing, and he did it, I think, 5 times on the front nine, and it was a 2-shot penalty for each time. So he got penalized 10 shots, and then he just like promptly like withdrew from the tournament. It was like, all right, that's it. I'm done here. I can't deal with this.
Yeah. I don't blame him. Let's keep the penalties going here. Let's talk about a PGA Tour player who was busted for cannabis, but he said is for anxiety. Matt Avery.
Yeah, Matt Avery. Is this a guy who's like, I think he's won maybe once or twice a while ago on the PGA Tour, and he's got an interesting little reputation. He's known for kind of being a hothead, very temperamental guy that has like had some club throwing incidents, some profanity incidents, and So he got suspended. The part that you and I found interesting about this is we always know how hush-hush the PGA Tour and golf is in general regarding suspensions. They threw this right out on Twitter saying that he is suspended for 12 weeks, getting busted for testing positive for cannabis. I was just surprised, Mike, by just how like blatantly like out there they made the story become.
Yeah, I would hope that this is precedent setting and like they're going to start publishing this sort of thing in the future, because if they don't do that, then it's incredibly unfair for you to be publishing some penalties that you put on players that aren't big names, and then you don't publish the penalties you do put on big names.
Right, like when Dustin Johnson mysteriously disappeared from the PGA Tour for 6 months and just happened to have a lingering injury, not unrelated to any sort of white illegal substance that he may or may not have done in the past. Not exactly. Related at all. Allegedly, you know?
So I hope the PGA Tour is just changing how they're going to do things, and that they're going to kind of wipe the slate clean and do it this way from now on, because otherwise I'm going to have a problem with the PGA if they don't do that.
Yeah. It's, so this is bad, and you're right. Bad thing to do. So this is precedent setting on two ends, on that end from the publicity standpoint, but then also this idea of, you know, the way that cannabis and marijuana is going in the public eye and how it's now being legalized on a medical and recreational level at different parts of the nation. And now you have guys like Every who are saying that they've been prescribed cannabis specifically for their anxiety. And it's been that way for a while. And it's just – it's going to put a huge gray area in these drug-related suspensions, because it's just going to add a lot more question to each scenario when you look at who's testing positive and who's not.
Well, I think the problem is that cannabis, while it is a drug that can be prescribed or used recreationally in some states, is still a performance-enhancing drug.
Right.
It has been since its inception. I mean, this is what people use so that they don't feel the pain, so that they can get through things. And just by that nature, it is something that isn't legal in any sport. So I think that's the problem. My other views around cannabis are maybe a little bit more complicated, but I think when it comes to sport, because it is something that's going to help you improve your game and play better, it can't be allowed. So they need to, as an athlete, if you're playing and your doctor describes you this substance, you need to say, hey, I can't take that because I'm a professional athlete. I need something else.
Very well put. And that's kind of the cap on the weird stories from the golf week, but that's a perfect segue, Mike, because that was probably one of the more political conversations we've had around a guy getting suspended from the game of golf right there. I don't think this is going to get brought up on the debate stage anytime soon. It didn't last week. They had debate number 4,578 last week. I don't know if you got to tune it all. You warned me about this. I had no idea this was coming.
Yeah. This one really, I think, snuck up on all of us. It just out of nowhere, this debate. And it happened, and then it ended. And it was about 3 hours. It took forever.
I know. 3 hours is rough, Mike. Listen, if we're making this for TV and we're putting some entertainment value behind this, we got to condense this to like 90 or 120 minutes. We got to cut the field too. You've been pining for this for months, but
it's here.
I need a lower cut number. That's what I need.
I'm going to say this right now. I've said this privately to people. I'm going to say this again. First of all, I think Mayor Pete is fantastic. I think he's awesome. I think he is, to an extent, can be the future of the party. There is no way he's going to win a national election. There is no way. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Yeah. I don't think the country is ready for it.
And it's not because we're not. It's the country.
No, I'd vote for him, but I just know he won't win in a national election. I just know it's not going to happen. And it's unfortunate to me, because that the country is so backwards in so many places that they won't consider someone just because of their sexual orientation or their religion or their sex. So I think he just needs to get out and put his support behind someone along with everyone else underneath him. This needs to go from a 10-horse race to a 3 or 4-horse race. And what's really unfortunate is Mayor Pete is now number 3 in the polls.
Yeah, so I noticed that. And Liz Warren's leading. I did not see that coming.
So this is just kind of crazy what's going on in the Democratic Party. It still is going to be interesting to see what shakes out. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that if he does end up winning the ticket for the Democrats, that he does go on to win, and that we're all really surprised by how accepting the country has actually become. But I think under our current president. That's not going to happen. So.
Yeah, and outside of the acceptance angle for a candidate like Mayor Pete, too, from the SNL skit last week, they did a great job in their cold open showcasing all the different candidates. And the funny line about Mayor Pete, which is probably ringing pretty true, is he's one of those guys where, you know, you just love to have him as a friend, but I don't know if we want to have him as president right now. That's kind of the way I see him right now. But shout out to Mayor Pete for climbing up the polls. The race has definitely opened up. I don't know if you saw any of that cold open last week. There were some great impersonations, though. I mean, just spot on. What's her name? Kate McKinnon's Liz Warren.
Liz Warren, which is really good. Amazing. Hers is really good, yeah.
It's amazing. Woody Harrelson as Joe Biden was not that great, Mike. I don't know where you stand on Woody, but it wasn't that fantastic.
I don't think he's too young.
Yeah, you can check that cold open out from last week. That was a good little like stage setter for what happened in the Bates and town halls from the past couple weeks. So we'll be keeping an eye on the trails. We're trying to cut the fat at this point. Let's get it down to like five or six people. You're looking for three or four, and you could go even lower, I guess. But we're heading towards the holidays here. Everything kind of gets blurred for the next couple months. I feel like this is kind of we're about to hit the lull in the presidential campaign, and then once we turn the corner to the top of the year, it's going to be intense. So we'll be watching it for you closely. Hit
Iowa, New Hampshire, it's all downhill from there. So
primaries and caucuses.
Let's move on to this week's featured guest. He's the director of instruction at TPC Boston, the home of a PGA Tour FedEx Cup event every other year. Plus, it's a small world, and he has a cool connection to a former Quinnipiac University basketball coach, our alma mater, of course. We know and love this coach. Sean Hester is coming up. But first, the course of life is brought to you by Izzo Golf. And now, it's the moment you've been waiting for. The Izzo Golf Swami Voice Clip Golf GPS is officially available. The Swami Voice offers total versatility. The built-in voice feature can deliver audible distances as you prepare to attack the pin. With multiple display orientation options, you can rotate the screen to view distances in a larger font. It's preloaded with over 38,000 golf courses worldwide with no subscription or download fees necessary. You can enjoy features like shot distance and the digital scorecard. Head over to their website at www.izzo.com and use promo code VOICE to get 25% off this GPS until October 31st. That's only like a week away.
Halloween.
Again, that's promo code VOICE for 25% off the new Izzo Golf Swami Voice Clip at www.izzo.com.
Next up on the tee, he is a Titleist staff teacher and the director of instruction at TPC Boston, home of an upcoming PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoff event next year. It's Sean Hester joining the Course of Life. Sean, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah, definitely. So right before we popped on, you know, we immediately had a lot of things in common, being that you not only teach in the Boston area, you're from the New England area and spend a lot of time there, but you also have a connection to myself and my co-host alma mater, Quinnipiac University. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with the past Quinnipiac basketball coach and Coach Tom Moore, who coached the Bobcats there for a few years.
Well, Coach Moore and I were actually born on the same day.
And, love it.
Same day, same year. And we went to the same high school. We met as high school freshmen at St. John's in Shrewsbury.
Okay.
We've been close friends ever since. And I made many trips to Quinnipiac rooting on the Bobcats when he was head coach there.
Nice. Yeah. And he was the coach during the same time that I worked for the program. So small world that you had that connection. And Coach Moore is still out there. He's the assistant at UConn now, from what you told me. So sounds like he's definitely landed for sure. And he'll be in the game forever because that guy's a basketball lifer if I've ever seen one. He really loves the game.
Yes, he is. We're both lifers in our own sports.
Yeah, definitely. So what's your, I guess, background? Were you quite literally a lifer in golf, you know, growing up as a kid? And you know, how much did you get to play competitively growing up and kind of how you got into the, you know, in a short summation of how you got to teaching the game where you are now?
Well, real short summation is I was broke playing, so it didn't take me long to figure out I had to do something else.
Right, definitely, yep. But,
I grew up caddying at Worcester Country Club and, you know, loved golf, obviously, and played at Boston College and then gave professional golf a try for couple of years, and it was quickly apparent that I did not have enough game to survive out there. And so my mother was in the supermarket and ran into the owner at Wachusett Country Club, Don Maroney. And Don said that if one of the boys wants to teach, we have a lot of members at the club that are interested in lessons. And that's how my teaching career began in 1991.
Very cool. So I guess, you know, at BC, you know, you had that experience of playing collegiately and maybe, you know, you had the taste, but when you fell back into that, the opportunity to coach the game and be around it full time without necessarily having the rigors of the competition and traveling on the road, you know, where did you first move? You know, how long were you at Wachusett and what was that experience like, you know, learning how to teach the game professionally day in and day out to you know, amateur golfers at the club?
Well, I'll tell you that I should probably have refunded many of those early lessons.
That's gracious of you.
They weren't very good. I remember one gentleman hit shanks for about 2 hours. Now, I did stay there. It was a 30-minute lesson, and I watched him shank it for 2 hours, and we both decided the sunlight was going away and we should probably go home.
Yeah, nice. That's good. I appreciate the persistence though, because us, you know, 80s, 90s and 100 shooters out there, and you know, we have a bad case. We like someone as an ally by our side to help solve that dreaded issue of the S word. So it sounds like you definitely took your lumps teaching. And I guess now being at TPC Boston, what's that like when you think about where you started teaching and how you started teaching the game to where you've gotten now? And tell everyone, for everyone who doesn't know, you know, that's a venue that's hosted a PGA Tour tournament for over 10, 15 years and what it's like teaching at that course day in and day out.
Well, I've been very fortunate throughout my career to, you know, be at great places. TPC Boston is certainly one of those. Prior to that, I was at Charles River for 20 years. And basically being around people that love the game so much and serious golfers that really want to get better. They're great environments for a teacher to be in. TPC is an outstanding facility. But getting back to my development as a teacher, you know, I got to spend, I started teaching in 1991. And in 1993, I started working with Peter Costas. I had worked with him on my own game for a few years, but then I started teaching with him in 93. And that was really a big break for me. I taught with him from 93 to 99, Breakers West in Florida in the winter.
Very cool. And for those who, you know, watch golf on TV, Costas is the guy who does the amazing slow-mo breakdowns of the best swings in the world. And you see, you hear his voice every single weekend. You may not see his face as much, but he's a fixture on those broadcasts and definitely someone that everyone learns from, no matter where you're at in the game. He's very visible.
He is. You know, he's known as an announcer now, but, you know, he was really part of the original Golf Digest schools in the 1980s with Bob Toski and Jim Flick and Bob Rutella, Jack Lumpkin, a lot of the early pioneers of teaching golf. And, it was an amazing experience to teach with him every winter from 93 to 99. And that really helped create a solid foundation
from which
I build on the rest of my career.
Yeah, those are when you rattled through those names, those are like the names that I grew up with seeing like on Golf Channel, like infomercials and like how to improve your game. Like those are some great names of that generation that brought, you know, instruction to the forefront in the modern day. So tell everyone a little bit what it's like during tournament week, where it's formerly the Dell Technologies. Now it's going to be the Northern Trust next year at the TPC Boston. Tigers come there several times. I've been to the tournament several times, you know, with the finish there, you know, at tournament 16, 17, and 18, the par five, it creates a really cool theater. And there's been some amazing moments in the game there in your history. Tell everyone what it's like kind of being on the grounds there and seeing the world's best at your course.
Well, there's nothing like having the best players in the world come locally to your area. And, you know, TPC Boston's had some great winners. That venue has, you know, Vijay Singh was battling Tiger for number one, and yep. You know, BJ's won there. Tiger's won there. Phil has won there. There's been some great winners, great list of champions that have held the trophy at TPC Boston. So it's a fantastic venue. It's a very exciting time. It's generally the first or second FedEx Cup playoff event. It'll be the first one in 2020. So it'll be very exciting, no doubt. And you know you're dealing with the best players of the year in that event. So the hottest players, in order to qualify for that event, you've got to finish, you know, with certain 125 maybe on the money list. And those players get into that event. So whatever the number is, you're dealing with the top players that year.
Yeah, it's going to be even more magnified now because they shortened the playoff from four events to three. So you're really going to see the best on hand. So it should be exciting this coming year as well in 2020. Any notable interaction or story from the pros being there? And who have you gotten the most enjoyment out of either watching play or interacting with when they visit you annually or biannually, that is?
Well, the one story I actually remember is I used to film Tiger every year, and he would have the first tee time for the Pro-Am, and this would probably extend back to, you know, the early 2000s or mid-2000s, and it was...
Yeah, he plays bright and early.
Yeah, I was there, so obviously it runs Labor Day week, so the Pro-Am would always be on Thursday instead of the typical Wednesday, because the tournament ends on a Monday. But I would be there Thursday at 6 o'clock in the morning. He would have the 7 o'clock tee time. And I remember Tiger he was testing out some drivers this one particular year and I was filming him. And he was hitting, he probably had a Nike driver at that time. And he was hitting these drivers out to a flag 280 yards away, like, you know, a normal player would hit wedges to that green. I mean, these balls were coming down high and soft, and he just hit every single driver right on top of the flag. And it was amazing to see how well he hit the driver. So I filmed everyone in the Pro-Am. He teed off on the first tee. So I went down to watch him on 10, the 10th tee at TPC Boston's, fairly close to the driving range. So I went down to the 10th tee and watched Tiger hit off 10 in the Pro-Am. And he hit a terrible tee shot, and his swing bore absolutely no resemblance to the smooth, great rhythm that he had on the range warming up. And I just, you know, it just stood out to me of, you know, how we all feel. He calls himself Ranger Rick, you know, when he's out there sometimes. He's really good on the range, and he even talks about it. I think that's something we all can identify with as golfers. You know, we hit the ball fantastic on the range, and we go out on the course and we can't find it.
So it's very, very humbling that you saw that firsthand from Tiger too, of anybody.
To see that firsthand, I think everyone assumes you're talking about a guy that's won more PGA Tour events than anyone. And you think he's tied with Snead or just passed Sam Snead at 80 or 81 events. And, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, is going to go down as one of the greatest champions of all time. And even he feels all the same feelings we feel, you know, in terms of taking his course, taking his game from the range to the course. And
very cool.
If you had a reel of Tiger's opening tee shots at the Masters, or, you know, one year at San Diego at Torrey Pines, it seemed like he made a 5 or 6 on the first hole. And I think he still ended up winning that event in the playoff with Rocco Mediate, but he hit a couple of poor looking tee shots off that first tee at Torrey Pines. And, you know, so it just goes to show you how difficult the game is, really.
And a really cool aspect too, that just even the GOAT has issues off the first tee, no matter where it is and who the guy is. It's crazy. But so talking about kind of what you've seen from the professionals, you know, you talked about your very deep history in teaching. You've taught in a lot of New England area pros. Some might know Rob Oppenheim, who's been a journeyman pro, who's been out there for a long time. And James Driscoll as well has had a lot of success on lots of tours, including the PGA Tour. Who's coming through there? there. I know TPC in Boston definitely attracts not only professionals, but a lot of maybe athletes in the Boston area too. I mean, who have you gotten the opportunity to maybe work with recently, or kind of who's out there on the range more often than you'd think?
Well, there's a lot of young guys that I'm working with right now that I'm pretty excited about. And, you know, I'm sure not too many people would know their names, but, you know, there's, you know, New England, Massachusetts is not a hotbed for PGA Tour golfers, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, you have to go back. I mean, New England guys, Brad Faxon, Billy Andrade, you know, those Rhode Island guys, and Fran Quinn, who I've worked with quite a bit and longtime friends with, and Rob Oppenheim, Kevin Johnson, James Driscoll, you know, Brad Adamonis. Those are basically the mass guys, New England guys that have, you know, had a go at the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Matt Parziali is one other guy that I would throw on that list soon, right, to be hope in the next couple of years, depending on what he does as an amateur or a pro. But
right. Matt's a great story. Great guy, and had the opportunity to work with Matt for the last, probably since 2012, and to see how far he's come is really rewarding. That's exciting to watch.
Yeah, very cool. And then, one other thing I wanted to ask you about too, I'd known about you and your instruction for a bit. You came up recently because Ryan Whitney, former NHL player who you'd been giving lessons to or had coached before, he's a former NHL player, and he had a question about kind of his amateur status because he was looking to do like a match for Barstool Sports and whatnot. I was curious kind of what you knew about how that all went down and kind of how that works with guys like Ryan who are, you know, out in the public and doing matches and whatnot, and how that affects their amateur status and just kind of that whole gray area that he'd been going through, you know, leading up to that event.
Yeah, so Ryan has worked really, really hard at his golf game. He loves golf, and he wants to compete at as high a level as he can. So his goal is to try to qualify for these USGA events. And this summer, he was able to qualify for the USGA four ball for next year, which is going to be at the Philly Cricket Club. And cool. I'm not a huge online guy, but I got wind that he was playing a $10,000 match, you know, that, you know, he's a Barstool guy and he's got a big $10,000 match against another Barstool guy.
Right. Yeah.
So I said to him, I said, look, I said, if I in my social media cluelessness know about this match, then there's a lot of people that are going to know about it. And you should make sure you check with the USGA to make sure you're not jeopardizing your amateur status, you know, down the road. So, you know, I reached out to someone that I knew at the USGA who referred me to another person, and I had Ryan contact that representative of the USGA, you know, just to see if he could play.
And okay, so he reached out, yeah.
So that's kind of what the background of what happened there. And, you know, I don't really know what the rulings are, and that's why I thought he should talk to someone there, but, you know, yeah, I don't want to see a guy like Ryan who loves the game and he loves to compete and have that be taken away because he's playing a match, you know?
Yeah, the whole thing was just so confusing. And it's strange the way the USGA quantifies and qualifies, you know, what your amateur status is and how you maintain it and whatnot. But that's a whole other conversation as well that you can go down crazy rabbit holes for. But it's definitely apparent that not only do you have a lot of history teaching in the game, but you've taught in a lot of different golfers and athletes from different walks of life. So I'm curious, kind of in all your time teaching, maybe what's the most unique lesson or student teaching moment that you've had, maybe not necessarily, you know, curing someone's shanks, but maybe just a most impactful moment you've had for a student of yours in your time teaching?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I need some time to think about that, but
I like that. At least I put you on the spot.
You know, what I would say is, you know, I was with Rob Oppenheim at the, I believe, 2016 U.S. Open at Oakmont. I believe it was that year. And Rob was hitting balls right next to Jordan Spieth. And, you know, I couldn't help but notice Jordan Spieth was having a hard time hitting an 8-iron straight. And, you know, again, the takeaway, same as with Tiger, is we all think that these players don't miss shots. And we all think that they're flawless from tee to green. And then the days they putt well, they shoot 65. And if they putt poorly, they shoot 71 or 2. And that's just not how golf is played, you know, at that, even at the highest level. And, you know, to watch Jordan Spieth struggle hitting an 8-iron, you know, on Wednesday before turn, you know, before round one on Thursday. And I'm sure Jordan, I remember he played pretty well in the event that week. So it's just cool to see that they're human and they miss shots. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things. I probably spent 8 weeks with Rob Oppenheim at different events on the tour that year. And you see an awful lot of bad golf shots that, you know, you think that's not really going to be the case, but in reality it is. And I think that's the biggest teaching lesson that I've gained from having been around the best players in the world, is they do hit bad shots.
And that,
these guys are just super talented and they know how to score the ball. But if you think you won't miss shots, you're wrong. All you got to do is go out there and follow them and watch them play a round of 18 holes, and you'll see some bad shots.
And that's good perspective, especially, you know, not only if it's just an amateur that's playing against someone in a club match who might be perceived to be a little bit better than them, or it's, you know, Rob Oppenheim warming up on the range next to Jordan Spieth, you know, trying to flush those nerves out and just getting that messaging across to him that every shot and every swing you make during the course of an 18-hole round doesn't have to be perfect. It's about how you rebound and how you put the score together, and they're not taking pictures on the scorecard. They're just writing down the number at the end. So that's definitely an important perspective to have for sure. Before you sign off again, it's Hester Golf on Instagram. If you want to take a look at his videos, not only that he's put out, but with his students as well, you can see him analyze a lot of different swings. I'm curious though, the one last question I want to ask you, because we ask pretty much all of our guests, is when you finish the round, Sean, and it's time to head to the 19th hole, which is our favorite hole, what is your go-to for like a meal and or a drink or beer that you like to have after a hard day's work on the golf course?
I would probably go with Stella, and I'd probably go with a burger.
All right, an important sub question, just because we've been bringing it up the last few weeks: grilled onions or raw onions on your burger?
Grilled.
You passed the test. Thank God. All right, good. We're taking polls there. So you're on team grilled onions. Thank God. Hey, Sean Hester, it's been a pleasure having you on, and look forward to seeing more of your content teaching. And why don't you shout out, you know, your website, or in addition to your Instagram, or where else people can find more about you or learn more about your content?
They can go to hestergolf.com and at hestergolf on Twitter and at hestergolf on Instagram.
Awesome. Sean, appreciate it. Thanks for joining the Course of Life.
Thank you, Alex. Enjoyed it.
Back. Great chat there with Sean Buds with our former Quinnipiac men's basketball coach, Tom Moore.
Yes, that hit me out of nowhere. We were talking about that. They're born on the same day. How about that? And Tom Moore back at UConn, too. Still coaching. That's good to hear. Coach Moore had a decent run at Quinnipiac. Just can't get that men's program over the hump and into the tournament. We came so close. You remember that game like it was yesterday against Robert Morris. God.
it's all about the women right now playing basketball.
Right. Yeah, it's all for about, sure. Yeah, no, but good chat with Sean, and cool to hear his insight watching Tiger at TPC Boston. Got a little perspective on that Barstool drama with the Riggs versus Ryan Whitney match, which got canceled. There was a lot of drama about that because Ryan Whitney didn't want to lose his amateur status by competing in this money match that was getting marketed and promoted by Barstool. It became kind of a whole thing. So interesting little tidbit from Sean there. And then obviously, Mike, burger with grilled onions. That is, that's officially like, we need to create like a hashtag around that because that's like my new like go-to question. And he's part of the grilled onions army. I think I just created the hashtag right there.
I just do a whole slice of onion. I just do kind of a thick slice of onion and slap it on the grill next to the burger.
Yes.
And I kind of cook down and caramelize. It's fantastic. And then there you just take, you know, if you don't want all the onion on your burger, you don't have to. But otherwise, it's kind of like just the right size of the patty goes right on top. It's great. It's fantastic.
There it is. So it's going to be, it's official, Mike. It's hashtag grilled onions army. I just created it right now in my head. I don't know how I did, but I'm a genius. So we'll roll with it.
We'll let you think that. let's, though, talk about your college week 8.
Oh, God.
Because, you know,
the roller coaster continues. A 7-3 week last week, I was feeling it. I felt like I was a sharp. I was thinking about moving to Vegas, you know, just starting it all over again. And I fell flat on my face with a 4-7 Saturday last weekend. Solid Friday, bad Saturday. But Mike, I will say there is something that encouraging that has happened. It's not much, but I gained about 10 followers on Twitter and they all were talking about gambling. So I think there are some people on the internet who are actually taking note of the fact that I'm half decent at college football gambling because I got chirped by someone on Twitter for having a bad Saturday last weekend. So it's one of those things where like, I didn't love having the 4-7 in my picks last Saturday for college football. I'm at Course of Life 1 on Twitter, at Course of Life 1. But when you start getting chirped, it's kind of like, maybe I'm doing something right because I'm starting to get some attention out there. So we'll see if the roller coaster corrects itself next week. And based on the way things have been going, I'm due for a hot week again.
It's going to be interesting. I do just want to say on a non-betting line in the college is how close South Carolina came to upsetting another top 10.
They did. Yeah. I bet on Florida in that game too. That game was on the ropes for a while.
Oh, man.
I think it was 38-27 was the final or something like that, but it was much closer and they almost struck lightning twice after that win over Georgia a week ago.
Yeah. That was crazy. Let's move on to the NFL. First talk about Sunday where my Giants lost again. I'm still saying the season's over. I've been saying it since day one. Season's over.
I mean, that was rough.
I mean, if you wanted me this week to be able to say like, oh, well, maybe the Giants, they needed to win.
Yeah. Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals walking into Giants Stadium and getting a win. That's not good. Rookie quarterback against rookie quarterback. I mean, you know, we've had some Daniel Jones moments this season where he's looked serviceable and okay, and then there's something there. But for Kyler Murray to roll in, get his third straight win, and they were just forcing turnovers galore. It looks sloppy, and yes, the season over diatribe that you've been spitting for the last month, it's becoming more and more real after a performance like Sunday for the Giants, for sure.
Yeah, it's over. let's talk about your Patriots, though. They rolled to this one.
Oh my God!
In Foxborough, the Jets came up and. I don't think they actually showed up at Foxborough, but someone in their uniforms did.
I went to Foxborough, Mike. The bar in Naples.
That's right. Which
you've been to. Which is literally just like Naples, Florida, Foxborough, Google it. It is like the most gigantic shrine to New England in the world. I mean, they did everything. Every single school was represented. There was even a Quinnipiac flag there. There's a Merrimack College flag. There's everything there.
You know, my biggest problem with this place was when we went, which was right after Quinnipiac lost to Yale in the NCAA championship hockey game. We saw the Quinnipiac banner next to the Yale banner, and that was just we just couldn't handle it.
Mike, you sitting down, brace yourself.
Is it back there again?
It's still there. Yeah, it's still there. I'm actually thinking I might have to donate a hockey jersey there next time I come down. I think that's probably the move, so we can just cover up the Yale flag completely. But yeah, I was at Foxborough last night, the official Patriots bar of Southwest Florida, and it was a rout. You know me, I'm the most committed fan you know. I left at the end of the third quarter. The writing was on the wall. The Jets were absolutely lifeless. Sam Darnold was mic'd up last night, the Jets quarterback. You'll appreciate this. He ran over the bench after a couple interceptions, mic'd up, and said, "I'm seeing ghosts." that's a scared quarterback right there, Mike. Absolutely petrified in the Patriots world. 33-0. And breaking news, they just signed Mohamed Sanu as well at wide receiver, just to add on to it, because we needed some more help, you know.
I do want to bring up too, we just saw this morning when we were kind of getting ready to record this on a Tuesday morning, we saw the Patriots late in the game were punting. They were in that kind of gray area between that punt and field goal. And of course, so they lined up and they just let the clock expire so they could, you know, back up a little bit. And the Jets declined the penalty. So Bill Belichick says, okay, we're going to go ahead and do a false start and go offsides here so we can get that done again. Yep. So they do that. They draw the offsides. And once again, the Jets decline the penalty, keeping the Patriots where they are. And you can just see Bill Belichick just really struggling to hold back that smile and that laugh. And he does not do a good job.
It's maniacal the way he looks. And he was just so desperately trying to avoid a smirk / smile. Like, he just couldn't help himself, though. He was just – he was on a football cloud nine last night. It was 33-0. The game had been over for an hour. And he's still strategizing how he can get the best possible punt late in the fourth quarter. And I love the pettiness by the Jets to just continuously decline the penalties. It was they refused to let it happen. And Bill Belichick couldn't help but crack about a 10% of a smile, which for anyone who knows Bill Belichick, that is a big deal. A 10% smile.
Yeah, unless it's at, you know, the end of the Super Bowl and they're celebrating, he shows zero emotion.
That's the one moment he cracks, yes, is when the Super Bowl is 110% over and the refs have left the field, then he smiles for the second time
in
the year.
Then he smiles. So the Patriots and the 49ers, still unbeaten with Jimmy W.
Unbelievable.
6-0 with the 49ers out there in San Francisco.
They won 9-0 in a monsoon in D.C. They were sliding across the field. It looked like, you know, those slip and slides used to go down at summer camp when you were a kid. That's what the field looked like. It was nuts. But yeah, Jimmy W, 6-0 Niners, 7-0 Pats. I mean, I've dangled it a couple times here, but just the mere thought of a Brady versus Garoppolo Super Bowl, that's very enticing for anyone. Yeah. I know who the whole country is getting behind outside of New England. That's what I do now.
It would be awfully interesting. Let's stay in Washington for a moment, because they're going to host a World Series for the first time since FDR was president.
The Nationals. Natitude is back.
Natitude. crazy to see them. And I am all Washington Nationals now, so they can beat up on those frickin' Houston Astros.
Yeah. Oh, man. Little Jose Altuve, Mike.
Oh, man.
Cranked one into the left field seats, walking off the Astros in Game 6. There was some life there when the Yankees won Game 5, and it looked like there was a glimmer at a Game 7. They tied it up, you know, with that DJ LeMahieu homer. Yeah. And, oh, man, Mike, what a rough way to go out. I feel so bad for you. I hate to see it, you know?
No, you don't.
It's the last thing I want to see.
It's not happening.
So you're all in on the Nats in this series.
I'm all in on the Nats.
This is a great pitching matchup. I know that.
It is going to be a great pitching matchup. This is going to be a great World Series. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's the Yankees had a fantastic run this season. I'm really excited to see what they can do to really shore up that starting rotation. And really, I think what CC Sabathia did also in game 4, I'm forgetting which game it was, where he dislocated his shoulder and still threw three more pitches afterwards, just is unbelievable.
Yeah,
to me,
he's been a rock and a warrior in the game forever. I mean, going back to his Cleveland days, even before he landed in New York, he officially called it quits after the series ended, and a great career for him. And that was some warrior mentality stuff from CC. Yankees do fall short, so it's going to be Astros Nationals. Let's see if we even make it to next week's episode based on that series. I don't know. I feel like it's going to go deep. We're going to see a lot of starting pitching. I think everyone needs to brace themselves and be extremely patient with these games. If you don't appreciate great pitching, this is not the World Series for you, but there's going to be a lot of talent out there on the field for sure.
I think this probably will go seven games.
Yeah. I'll go contrarian and say Astros in six. I know you're going to go Nats in what? How many games the Nats?
I think the problem is if it goes seven, it's going to be the Astros because they're going to be able to put out, you know, Verlander and Cole
they'll go
twice.
Nuts. Yeah,
and, it is game over. So in that case, I think I have to say, no, it's going to be Nats in six because I want the Nats to win. But if it goes seven, I think it's advantage Houston.
Cool. Good stuff. So we'll be looking out for the World Series. Obviously, football season chugging along. God, Celtics are tomorrow night. NBA season starts this evening. There's a lot going on and a lot
college
more.
Hockey.
Too. We got Tiger this week, so we'll be talking more Tiger next week and a whole lot more. And so I'm going to go get back to the rest of my vacation now. I have a lot of tan I need to work on. There were a couple spots I missed yesterday, Mike, so I'm going to get
those. Shut up and sign off the podcast.
All righty. For Mike, I'm Alex. This has been another edition of The Course of Life. Everyone have a good week.